From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. If Saturday night in downtown Sacramento was protest intensive, last night was brazen, with businesses deeply damaged for blocks along J Street. Some were hit for a second time. Brazen is a word from my Cap Radio colleagues who have been there day and night for the last number of days. But you're about to hear from a business owner who was in his J Street store when thieves came. He is Michael Summerfield. He owns Miosa Bride near 11th and J. He's been in business for more than 20 years. Michael, thanks so much for joining us today. It must have been a harrowing night.
It was. Not very fun. We came in expecting to try to protect the property of our brides, and then it turned into much more than we could handle really rapidly.
So give me a bit of the play-by-play. Tell me how it began and how it unfolded, Michael.
Okay. Yeah. As the crowd went by, we had a bunch of people coming like small clusters, and then the small clusters turned really rapidly into like an entire very large wave with maybe, if I had to guess, it was 200 or 300 people in a big cluster. So as the group was larger, I think they felt they had more power together, and it became overwhelming really rapidly. As we were in there, the larger crowd all came to the window all at the same time. Literally, it seemed like there was 100 people breaking windows at the same time is what it felt like. And again, we were just trying to protect, you know, the property as much we could, but without trying to get too involved.
Where were you?
I was actually right in back of I have a little barricade in back of the entrance, and I was right there next to it watching as it happened.
So what were they breaking windows with?
They were breaking them with bars, crowbars, and I think some sort of heavy sticks, it seemed like. It was in the heat of the moment, I didn't get quite the look I should have, but it was something along that line.
And then people came into the store. You had removed a lot of the wedding dresses earlier. In fact, you and I saw each other and talked to each other yesterday, and you had cleared out a lot of the store, but not completely.
Right, not completely. Yes, we had more that we were trying to protect. Again, it wasn't about greed. It was about protecting other customers' weddings. So I think it worked out well in terms of that protection, but I think we only really got lucky to get out alive, it felt like.
And so how much time did people spend in your store?
They broke in at 8:24, and that's when the first big group of broken windows occurred, and then it went on through 4 o'clock in the morning, and about every 5 or 10 minutes, looters were coming in, and many of them were women, to my surprise. And we actually have a whole lot of video and photo, because we have many cameras throughout the store for security, some of which were facing outside at the front door where they were breaking into.
So this was happening to your neighboring businesses aside of you as well. Was there ever police response? Was there ever any help through that all those hours?
We got probably what they could give us, which was virtually none. We called about 40 times, and at times I saw clouds of smoke, what appeared to be clouds of smoke coming from the building. It was kind of out of my normal field of view, so I couldn't quite tell, but it looked like a couple of big clouds, so I was getting worried. Again, one of the number one reasons I was there was to prevent, you know, these kind of things. And,
So, Michael, you had not boarded up your windows, and now you've got broken glass and a ransacked store. What are you doing today? Because who knows, tonight may bring waves again.
Yes, we're doing what we can. We feel fortunate that we're uninjured, and it was a severe loss, you know, financially, of course, and we are definitely working on taking care of that, boarding up everything.
We are just getting news that the Sacramento mayor, Daryl Steinberg, is announcing officially this afternoon, but informally right now, that there will be a curfew tonight in Sacramento, and the city okay. is considering bringing in the National Guard, the curfew to begin at either 7 or 8 o'clock. Michael, would a National Guard presence or a curfew have helped last night?
I believe it would have helped a little, but it was so bad that I believe it wouldn't have helped even enough. So it was quite surprising to me how overwhelming the force was, and the leaders of the group seemed to be really mindset, and there was leaders and followers, I suppose. It probably would help, but honestly, they need a lot of people there to prevent that, a lot. And they have to have, you know, more like real weapons, because I honestly don't think they'll be able to do much without them.
Were you ever threatened personally in the process? And did people in the store know that you were there?
Some of them knew that we were there. Probably maybe 20 to 50 of them knew that we were there. They saw us. But then right as they saw us, I think a police officer was driving down the road with their lights on. So they all ran and scattered, and they, you know, stayed away long away for us to escape. A security guard helped us out from across the street.
You're in the bridal business, and the pandemic had already hit brides and weddings so hard. So that was already the first big blow to the store. But I'm thinking about the brides right now listening to this conversation who might have had a dress or a plan through your store. Do you want to offer any more information about what went on specifically with dresses?
I have a large amount of actual customers' bridal gowns in there that during the pandemic they weren't picking up probably. You know, there was a lot of financial hardship, so they couldn't get them picked up out of the store on a normal basis. So we had a lot of the customer dresses. What we were trying to protect were those. The ones that we have, we, of course, would like to have protected them, but we didn't feel we could really do that. So we did what we could, and quite frankly, I think it worked out about right. We had, I don't know exactly how many dresses gone yet, but quite a few, as well as severe damage, computer, you know, equipment stolen. A lot of interesting things occurred.
What I understand you saying is that it was your own stock, your own supply, perhaps sample dresses, that was mainly stolen, and that you were protecting the dresses and the property of the brides and customers.
That's correct.
Okay.
And, you know, again, we can't replace those. We just can't actually replace those. So that was the problem. Ours, we could replace. You know, we have time to. But in the industry, it takes, you know, a good 4 to 6 months to get, you know, if not longer, really, dresses ordered, you know, custom orders for brides. And, you know, we simply don't have the time for most of our customers.
All right, Michael, there are so many more questions and points we could talk about. I'm going to leave it right there because we are going to hear more descriptions about last night. But I wish you and your business and your staff the best. And I know you're in the process of reaching out to customers and preparing for tonight. So thank you for your time today and good luck.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you.
You too, Michael. It's Michael Summerfield, owner of Miosa Bride near 11th and J Street. Cap Radio reporter Scott Rodd was downtown last night, and so his report coming up now is going to give you a broader sense of some of the experience.
The real damage began at dusk. Red and black spray paint appeared scrawled across city walls, and protesters torched a couch. Soon, people began smashing storefront windows and rushing out with whatever their hands could carry. An eyeglasses shop, a deli, multiple 7-Elevens, a Macy's, a BevMo liquor store. The destruction tore through nearly 15 blocks along J Street, much of it unimpeded by police. By the time law enforcement caught up, demonstrators had crossed into Midtown. That's where I found Natomas resident Jason Bell, who had been protesting most of the day.
What were you hoping the message would be or what people would see tonight?
That putting your knee on someone's neck is not acceptable. They're shooting at us now.
Sorry, man. It's all good, it's all good. No, we gotta move. We gotta move.
The volley of rubber bullets and flash grenades subsided, and I reconnected with Bell down the block.
Obviously, it's gotten a lot hairier, more hectic, more damage. I mean, what are your thoughts on what's happened from earlier to now?
I just think that people don't know how to voice their opinions. So this is what they get. This is what you get when we don't know what to do. It's a matter of not having an outlet for the frustration, the uproar. The world may see it as wrong, but this is what we feel it's going to take for the government to hear us.
As police fired pepper balls and demonstrators returned verbal taunts, a melange of songs celebrating protest and black power poured into the streets from car speakers. A handful of people came out to protect storefronts. Mario Castellanos stood outside of Mike's Camera, where he buys photography gear. He says he supports protesting injustice, but implored people to leave the locally owned business untouched.
How is this business going to recuperate from that? This is not helping.
Less than an hour later, the store windows were shattered.
No justice!
Styles Tattoos on J Street was also broken into. Owner Chris Lofton had removed some valuables, but people still made off with a computer and some tattoo equipment.
It means that, we're in a messed up position. You know, I mean, we haven't been in business for going on 4 months now. Coming back and coming to this is very hurtful, you know.
Back on the street, around 2:30 in the morning, the protesters had largely dispersed, leaving behind flashing lights, a chopper overhead, and empty, battered streets.
That was a report from Cap Radio's Scott Rodd last night. Scott's standing by right now. And Scott, I just want to expand on the point here that there are so many different groups and individuals that it's hard to know who's moving through what part of the protest activity at what time. But to what degree were or are some of the groups that are smashing into businesses, stealing and destroying property, not the people who are in the walks and the more civil demonstrations? Is there any way to know that?
You know, it's hard to get a kind of scientific read on it, but, it seems pretty clear that there are groups that are bent on just destruction. And then there are ones that are clearly out there intending to march and protest and raise the issue of police brutality and inequality. I mean, just last night I was out at the protest for a number of hours, and there was one point where, the larger group had kind of split, where there was one group that was at the Capitol protesting peacefully, you know, facing off against officers, but still being peaceful. And then you had all these little smaller other groups that it was clear they didn't have interest in furthering that kind of conversation, so to speak. They were bent on just destruction.
All right. Thank you for your reporting and thank you for your time today on Insight, Scott. And I'll refer everybody to capradio.org for more of your experience and your work. Thanks again.
Thanks.
So just to repeat that Sacramento's Mayor Daryl Steinberg is saying, and here's the quote, "Without question, tonight there will be a curfew in Sacramento." He said, "After two nights of this, I think it's time to ratchet it up. It needs to be approved by the city council and the city manager. The curfew, he says, could start at 7 or 8 p.m. this evening. There will be a closed city council meeting at 2 o'clock this afternoon to discuss this. So let's hear voices of the protesters. And we can do that through conversations that they had with my CAP Radio colleagues, politics reporter Nicole Nixon, data reporter Emily Zentner, and healthcare reporter Sammy Kaola. Hi to all three of you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
We're starting with Nicole right now. And this demonstration yesterday started in the early afternoon. Will you talk about what it was like when you were there?
Yeah, it was really peaceful. There were no police while we were there. There was a moment of silence. There was this vigil type setup where they had played some songs. People laid down flowers and candles and posters for people of color who've been killed by police. Their organizers were out there handing out water and snacks and face masks and medical supplies. I did tune into the actual demonstration for just a little bit. The organizers were educating people about, you know, what to do if they are injured in a protest, just things like how to flush tear gas out of your eyes and how to staunch bleeding. And then by the time that I left around 8 p.m. or around 5 p.m., sorry, the crowd had grown considerably. I would say it was easily more than 500 people around that time. And that's when the crowd broke and began marching downtown.
So what were people telling you while you were there?
Yeah, it was definitely a mix of emotions. We talked to a lot of people just about the systemic racism and the racial profiling that they've experienced in their lives and just what they have been feeling over the past few days, seeing all of these events unfold locally and around the country. You know, people are angry. People are tired because they feel like they've been trying to point out these inequities for a really long time. But there also seemed to be a sense that, you know, hopefully this time it would result in change. I talked to 28-year-old Brittany Randall a little bit about that.
I sound hopeful because, as the quote goes, to be black in America is to be in a rage all the time. And I'm angry a lot. I'm constantly telling my friends and educating them as allies what I see, what my experience is. But if I'm not hopeful, I'm drowning in despair and anxiety and fear. And I don't want to live my life like that. I don't want my life to be defined of if a white person is going to see me the wrong way. I've been called, I've been abused for being black, and I'm not going to live my life in fear of that because it's going to happen.
Nicole, you spent more time talking with her. What else did she say?
Yeah, she said she was really encouraged by Sacramento's demonstrations because there seemed to be a real sense of unity and there were diverse voices coming together for the same cause. Remember, though, this was during the day when things were very peaceful.
Right.
She did bring up arguments about break-ins and property damage. Here's what she had to say about that.
I heard waking up this morning and even watching the social media last night, a lot of people talking about the looting and, you know, it detracts from the message or you guys lose people. If those people are lost because of looters, they weren't won either way. If they think that they're winning the moral high ground because of losers or because of looting, it doesn't take away from the fact that a man was killed unjustly. It doesn't take the fact away from 200 plus thousand people have been killed unjustly by the cops. And I think if anyone makes that argument, they need to look at why is it that just a building, which I understand someone's job and someone's life, I get how much that hurts, but buildings can be rebuilt. Businesses can be brought back, jobs can be found. That life, once it's gone, can't be taken. And just because someone loses, it doesn't negate from what actually happened and what we're actually fighting for.
That's Brittany Randall talking with CAP Radio's politics reporter Nicole Nixon. So hang on, Nicole. I think we have Sammy Kaola with us now. Hi, Sammy.
Hi, Beth.
So the intention yesterday was to try to capture the voices of black demonstrators, and you've had this experience more than once in the course of a couple days. So what did the demonstrators say to you?
Yeah, our intent was really just to do some listening in Sacramento's black community about some of these underlying problems. You know, we've been hearing on social media that not everybody understood sort of the root cause of the demonstrations. Not everybody understood where the rage was coming from. I talked to Josh Coleswell. He's 28. And I just want to know what it's like when these police killings happen to unarmed black men, what it's like to watch that as a black man yourself, and here's what he had to say about that.
Because George Floyd was black, this officer felt the need to put his knee on the back of his neck. And that is an excellent metaphor for how we are treated in America every single day. It is the knee on the back of our necks, and George Floyd was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Sammy, I think that that's just being echoed all over the world. Now we're hearing about protests in Copenhagen and London and Auckland, New Zealand. What happened, though, in Sacramento after the daytime demonstration and then the shift of the crowd as it moved into evening time and sort of that evening tenor?
I was sort of there for this in-between period. So when Nicole and Emily and I were at the plaza, it was, as she said, very peaceful. You know, there were speakers, people were sort of sitting on the grass, standing with their fists raised, but a very calm demeanor. From there, they actually took off and sort of marched through many different downtown streets. They went to the Capitol and took a lot of turns. And sort of as they went, the momentum really built. And you had people on megaphones and you had a lot of chanting. Some people were climbing on barriers at the Capitol, though they didn't actually get into Capitol Park. Then we headed toward Interstate 5, and that was when people started to walk onto the ramp. There were some cars parked on the ramp, and people walked sort of through between the cars. I followed them. I pretty much got onto the interstate myself. I didn't want to get too close because there was a police line on the interstate, but as you may have seen in our coverage, demonstrators did manage to block both directions of the I-5, and so it was very surreal to be out there on the interstate, just watching people sort of walk right up to law enforcement and just say, hey, we are going to hold space here, and we are not going to back down. So eventually, law enforcement was able to get them back off the interstate.
So that's Cap Radio's healthcare reporter, Sammy Kayola. Okay, Sammy, hang on a moment. I want to get to Emily Zentner. And Emily, you know, the George Floyd story is right now, but in this city, it's the Stephon Clark story. And nationally, not so many days ago, it was the Amy Cooper and the Christian Cooper story and variations of the pain and the anger that are coming up. And I wonder whether the idea of historical pain came up in your conversations.
Yeah, we heard that from a couple of the people that we talked to, that this is not just about one or two instances. This isn't just about George Floyd. This isn't even just about what's happening between black people and police. This is a historical pain for a lot of the people that we've talked to. And we heard from some people that they're facing the same injustices that they saw their parents and grandparents facing, and that they're out carrying these generations of pain with them. And we spoke with 38-year-old Caleb Hervey, who talked about this and talked about how hard it is to feel like he's carrying all of that with him. So I'd love to hear from Caleb.
I think about, you know, all the way back to slavery up until today, where we continually are separated from American society, right? We're treated as if we're less than. And so to say that my pain is just in one instance is inaccurate. It really is about historical pain. So really feeling the pain of like my father, who grew up in the South, and my grandfather, and to still today to stand as a 38-year-old man and have to deal with the same type of injustice, it hurts on a level that's hard to articulate and have other people really connect to. But just know that it's more than just about me. Like, I have a nephew that I think about on a daily basis. And so the pain of having to figure out how to have that conversation is something that I can't help somebody else understand. But just know that it's deeper than just this instance. You know, this is something that every day I wake up with and carry and then still have to show up and go to work with.
So, Emily, you're on the digital team here, and there was a decision made to showcase these conversations and these voices in a certain way. Would you explain that and the thought behind it?
We've had coverage of the protest itself, bring what's happening downtown, where the movement is. But at the center of this, there are just a lot of black demonstrators feeling a lot of sadness and anger and pain in general about what's happening. And we really wanted to highlight those voices and those people who are out there protesting through the radio story, but also through photos and video, so that people can really connect with the emotion behind this and understand, aside from the protests that are happening, what people are feeling and what the movement and the thoughts behind this are.
So for all three of you, before I let you go, I would like you to tell me which emotion of any spectrum you want to choose you heard most often in the people you spoke to. And Nicole, I'll go back to you. In the many conversations, which emotion was most present?
You know, I heard a lot of just tiredness because the people that I talked to said that they have been trying to articulate these feelings for a long time. They've been saying this. They've been going to protest their whole lives, and they feel like finally they're being heard, and finally it feels like maybe it may result in something.
All right. That's CAP Radio's politics reporter, Nicole Nixon. Nicole, thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
Same question to you, Sammy. Which emotion did you hear most?
I'm going to say fear. I talked to so many Black demonstrators yesterday who said they are just afraid in their everyday life, walking around, going to the grocery store, going to the park with their children, driving. This is something we hear about a lot, is these microaggressions against Black Americans. But it was really disheartening for me to hear it from, you know, people right here in our community. And yeah, people are scared.
That's CAP Radio's healthcare reporter, Sammy Kayola. And Sammy, thanks to you as well today.
Thanks, Beth.
And Emily, same question. Which emotion?
I heard a lot of sadness. You know, people have been watching this happen for a while. And, you know, obviously there's anger there too. But I just heard from a lot of people who are just sad to watch this happen and to watch people in their community be hurt.
Emily Zentner is CAP Radio's data reporter. And again, Emily, will refer everybody to capradio.org to see and hear more of this reporting. Thanks for joining us this morning. And California's governor will hold a press conference today at noon. We will also this afternoon have more coverage of the announcement of what the mayor of Sacramento intends to be a curfew for the city for tonight. So all that continues today online and on air at CAP Radio. Up next, a bit of the national perspective from Ken Rudin, the political junkie. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.